Good morning, and welcome to the Wednesday, March 16th, 2022 meeting of the House Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them, and for the public, these same materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they are attached to the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Mr. Lee, would you please take the roll?
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Roll call will commence now. Chair Dabney?
Present.
Representative Sandstead?
Present.
Representative Kreisha?
Present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Daniels?
Present.
Representative Damith?
Present.
Representative Drafskowski?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson, present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Jordan? Representative Marcourt will be joining us later. Representative Mueller?
Mueller, present.
Representative Richardson?
Present.
Representative Thompson?
Thompson, present.
Representative Walgamott?
Walgamott, present.
Representative Shung?
Present.
Representative Joaquim?
Present.
Mr. Chair, we have quorum.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Lee. Representative Damith, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from Tuesday, March 15th? And if so, would you like to move approval of those same minutes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I have had the opportunity to review the minutes, and I would move approval of the minutes from Tuesday, March 15th.
Thank you very much. Members, any discussion to the Damith motion? Seeing none, members, this is a voice vote. If you'd please unmute. All those in favor of the Damith motion approving the Tuesday, March 15th minutes, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Damith. Thank you, members. Our first bill this morning will be hearing from Representative Edelson about a bill that relates to special ed costs. Members, it's our intention to lay this bill over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill by 11 a.m. Representative Zhang, would you like to make a motion to move House File 3963 before the committee and to lay it over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
Yes, Chair. I would like to move the bill for introduction and for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill.
Thank you, Representative Zhang. Welcome to the committee, Representative Adelson. Please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize, members. I'm having a little bit of technology issue, so I'm going to have my camera off. House Files 3963 proposes a new aid category of special education aid called high-cost service aid to provide additional special education aid for those school districts that serve students whose total special education costs are more than three times the state average of special education costs per student. So members, if we're looking at per pupil average right now is about $19,644, that would be about $59,000. So with that, service levels depend on each student's IEP. Students may receive only an hour of services a week, while others may be in a program that provides special instructions for a full school day. In 2022, we have about 149,000 students that qualify for special education services. In terms of the varying levels of services, members, I'm trying to find that out. Let's see. The bill does three things. It creates a definition around high-cost services. And it also, secondly, it creates a high cost service reimbursement. So it requires the Department of Education to calculate the difference between the total cost for each qualifying student and the state federal aid provided for that student. It would create an aid payment amount equal to the amount of 90% for the difference between the high cost for each high cost student and the aid attributable to that student. And then lastly, it would create an added amount necessary for the high cost tuition reimbursement aid to the appropriations for special education aid for out-of-state tuition. This legislation would help balance the cross-substate issue that we're seeing across districts. Many districts might have a population, more high needs population than others. This is, as a state, it is something that we should share. And so, Mr. Chair, with that, I would like to go to my testifier so we can really start to show you what this looks like in practice.
Thank you for that introduction, Representative Edelson. First on my list is Jeff Jorgensen, Director of Student Supports in the Edina Public Schools. Mr. Jorgensen, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. I'm Jeff Jorgensen, Director of Student Support Services at Edina Public Schools, testifying in support of the current bill that's under consideration. This was a bill that was discussed with Representative Edelson in terms of its formative nature to help local school districts, especially in the area of working with extraordinary cost special education students. I think every director in the state of Minnesota can comment on that special student or that collection of special students that we receive on a yearly basis and that we attempt to serve to the best of our ability. Though some of those students require extraordinary care, even the ones that Representative Edelson had talked about earlier that are receiving services during the course of their entire day, oftentimes wouldn't meet the threshold in accordance with this bill. That is identified in this bill. What we're really talking about is students that have extraordinary services in terms of the amount of personnel that have to be devoted to them on a daily basis. I know that my fellow testifiers from other districts can share some of their information that they've experienced in the past, but we've had situations where we've had private duty one-to-one nurses coming in to be able to provide services to our students. Just the cost of those services for full-time nursing services one-on-one would exceed the three times the average cost. And we have students that are accessing our intermediate districts here in the Minneapolis Twin Cities area that are also in excess of $80,000 and frequently will top over $100,000 in cost per year. Those students in particular can really impact smaller school districts, but even larger school districts, because the larger school district, the more students we have that fit this type of criteria, and it can cripple our budget, increasing the overall cross subsidy within each of our districts, and really putting a limitation on the types of services that we can provide in-house. And so we don't receive all of that funding back from the state right now. Our average is about 62% is what we receive on all student expenditures. But when it tops that 100,000 mark, it really does become depreciated in terms of the amount of money that we receive back. With that, I would like to pass that off to Director Nisler so that she can further that testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen. Next on the list is Heidi Nisler, Director of Special Education for the Sherbourne and Northern Rite Special Education Cooperative. Ms. Nisler, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. I am Heidi Nisler, Director of Special Education for the Sherbourne and Northern Rite Special Education Cooperative. I serve the districts of Becker, Big Lake, and Monticello, so just northwest of the Twin Cities metropolitan area. And my organization, my district, is different. I provide some of the highly specialized programs for students that have incredibly unique needs and need very intensive programming. A specific example I can share with you is a student who we had to create an individual program for him based on his unique needs. And the programming for this one student cost over $200,000. And this was just to ensure his safety, the safety of other students, the safety of the staff. And it was required to provide him a free and appropriate public education, which is our obligation as educators. The cost of this program, as Jeff said, over half of it was reimbursed by state special education aid. But for this one student, over $100,000 of the cost for this one student was the responsibility of the district through their special education cross subsidy. So this is a district that has about a $3 million cross subsidy. And of that, over $100,000 was due to just one single student to ensure that his needs are being met. This is not the only example. We have many other students who require far more than the $60,000 that Representative Edelson mentioned being three times the average rate. We have many students who need direct nursing services, who need direct paraprofessional supports as well. And especially in smaller districts, a single student can have a tremendous impact on a district's overall ability to meet the needs of all students, regardless of their disability status.
Thank you, Ms. Nisler. Last on my list is Michelle Chuka, Supervisor of Specialized Services for the Eastern Carver Schools. Ms. Chuka, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Michelle Chuka, and I am the Supervisor of Specialized Education Services for the Eastern Carver County School District, so over by Chanhassen, Chaska area. And I'm pleased to provide my testimony today in support of House File 3963. Similar to Director Nisler's testimony, I have a few examples. Periodically, we always have students in a single district that would meet this threshold of high cost. In the Eastern Carver County School District, we have about 1,500 students with special needs that we provide special education services for. And currently, we would have three students that would meet that high cost threshold. The first two that we have are similar to what you've heard, which is medically fragile students. We have two, one at the elementary level and one at the middle school level, who require 24/7 nursing care. So that means that we as a district, while that student is in school, must provide a nurse to each of those students one-on-one for that entire school day. Typically, we're not able to hire a nurse. There's just a shortage of everything in education these days. So we often have to, as is the case this year, contract that service out, which is about $100,000 per year per nurse. So right now, just for nursing services alone, we have a $200,000 hit that is hitting our cross subsidy as well. Another example that's a little bit different is we do have a student who is significantly impacted by autism, who requires a one-to-one para all day and the equivalent of like a half-time teacher just for him all day, which costs us about $80,000 additional per year to educate him. So these costs, as you've heard, just serve to increase the cross subsidy. And if this bill were to go into effect, while it won't solve all of the issues around special education funding, it's definitely a step forward and will provide relief when faced with the high costs and reduce that overall cross subsidy. So thank you for your time and consideration of this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Chuka. When this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of the bill hearing. We received no request for public testimony. With that, member questions, and I see Representative Erickson, you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this question is for the author. Representative Edelson, have you talked to the Congressional Delegation of Minnesota to explain to them what is happening, not only in our state, but across the nation? Because these cases to which the testifiers have referred are occurring across the state. I've had some of the similar costs in my school districts where nurses are needed to provide the needs for these special needs children. So, you know, we can't keep putting Band-Aids on special education. We need to get to the originators of IDEA, which is the Congress, and put the emphasis on them to help us out, not in funding necessarily as the only solution, but to take a look at what we're doing in special education, because our needs are getting greater, but something has to change or this is going to worsen. And we're not going to be actually helping these children. We're going to be hindering them because they're not really getting educated. They're getting taken care of many times medically. So, you know, this is a huge problem, and I hope that we can work together. And I talked to my congressional delegation, but they serve in the minority. I mean, I haven't spoken with our senators, but with my congressmen, Emmer and Stauber, you know, and they understand this, but, you know, like my serving in the minority and they're serving in the minority, you don't have as much influence as you do when you serve in the majority. So I hope, Representative Edelson, that you're talking to them about IDEA and about how changes should occur. When Representative Klein served and was chair of education and labor in the House, he did some really good work, but that's years ago, about taking a look at special education and how it was growing and what needed to change. So I hope the same can occur. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Edelson, a response?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erickson, I couldn't agree more. I have been in contact with our delegation. Representative Phillips, or Congressman Phillips, is somebody I have been talking closely with. I've also tried to reach out and connect with our new secretary on the federal level of education to make sure that they understand the pressing needs that we are seeing as a state. Until then, I really do think we need to figure out how to deal with look for solutions that we have. And this is just one possible solution that I'd like our committee and our state to be thinking of while hopefully they are working on it on a federal level. I couldn't agree with you more.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. You know, Representative Erickson, it sounds like some of what you're talking about is really a plea for additional multi-tiered system of supports approach, response to what RTI. You and I have both been around for those conversations where schools are able to assess students' needs and intervene earlier and sometimes are able to respond to those student needs and avoid identifying them as special education students, but meet their needs in other ways. So looking more at an MTSS support may be a good counterpart to this bill, looking at the cost drivers for school districts. Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You kind of took the words right out of my mouth. I completely agree with you. We need to have those wraparound services to meet kids where they're at and earlier on, so maybe we can avoid some of the cost in their secondary education and further. But I also agree with Representative Erickson. This is something we need to be addressed at the federal level as well. As you know, since the IDEA Act was brought into effect, the feds have not paid more than 17% at the top end of the 40% that they promised. That being said, I am a very big proponent of the IDEA Act and making sure kids are serviced in the least restrictive setting and that they're all part of our community. I want to thank Representative Edelson for coming forward with this creative idea. It is hard. Sometimes it's hard to solve the problem that's right in front of us, and it's easier to say, well, maybe it's somebody else's problem. But I'm sure you're going to continue to work on this bill to figure out the best way to address it. And hopefully we can start putting some more money into stemming the school's current cross subsidy that they have and make sure that the state's also living up to its responsibility. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. Any other questions or comments from members? Seeing none. Representative Edelson, any closing comments?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. I want to thank you all for your consideration. We really, truly are, I think, as a state and as a collective people that work in special education are trying to figure out what do we do if we do not get help. And so I thank you for the discussion today, and I thank you all for the consideration for this bill and the omnibus.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. And with that, Representative Zhuang renews his motion to lay over House File 3963 for possible inclusion or for further consideration at a later date. Thank you to the testifiers. Appreciate your insights today. Next bill hearing is House File 3816 from Representative Moran. Members, it's our intention to lay this bill over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill by 11:30 a.m. Representative Wolgamott, would you like to make a motion to move House File 3816 before the committee and to lay it over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
Yes, I would. That is my motion, Mr. Chair. So moved.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. Chair Moran, welcome to the committee. Please introduce your bill.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I want to thank you for the opportunity to come before you to introduce House File 3819. We know that the last 2 years has been tough for our children within our educational system. And we know, especially for our Posse Caucus, but also especially for our Black children, that they have fell behind a couple of grades. But we also know the importance of education. And that provides an opportunity out of poverty. It creates an opportunity for a good life. It's not always guaranteed, but we do all know how important education is. So House File 3819 is bringing forth the Network for the Development of Children of African Descent, which I will call NETCAT for the purposes of speaking for this organization, who provides a cultural critical literacy program that is holistic and two-generational approach that creates self-determination and efficacy. NETCAT prepares children for success in school and life. They help parents help their children achieve academic and social success, while also helping teachers and educators better serve African descent learners. The SACOFA program improves educational outcomes. According to a Ramsey County Workforce Solution Evaluator in 2019, they said that NETCAT services provide a sample of what can be accomplished when systems listen to the needs and expectations of communities and work together to create meaningful and lasting services in partnership and through serving whole families. Members, we have to be intentional with our investment in what works. NETCAT SACOFA reading programs improves educational outcomes. They saw a 100% increase in reading skills. Students increased 2 to 5 guided reading levels in 9 weeks. 65% met or exceeded grade level reading. A 5-year research evaluation showed that prior to SACOFA, student reading abilities were declining. After SACOFA, students were growing at an additional 0.15 reading word correctly per minute. And prior to SACOFA, student school attendance was sporadic. After SACOFA, student school attendance was increasing. They have a power parent literacy and advocacy workshop that has improved workforce and family stabilization outcomes. There was a county evaluating of parent power graduates that showed that 64.3% increase in their engagement in work-related activity hours, 17.9% increase in their educational hours, and a 4.2 increase in their hours unemployment. Mr. Chair and members, this is a program that is creating outcomes that I know that we want to see in every student. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm going to pause because I know we have a couple of testifiers and I would like for them to be the messenger of this message of the work that they're doing.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Moran. I have 3 testifiers on my list for House File 3816. The first one, Ms. Ford, founder and executive director of NCAD. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Oh, Mr. My apologies, sir.
Well, thank you, Chair Daphne and Representative Moran and committee members. My name is Brother Giovanni Ford. I'm the founder and executive director of Network for the Development of Children of African Descent. And I just want to thank you for this opportunity to share a little bit of our work and the impact that it's having on children and families here in the Twin Cities, but also in other parts of the state. As Representative Moran indicated, families are doing such incredible work. Our organization, we've been around for over 2 decades, studying and learning from our children and families that we work with. We're learning how to reach and teach and support children and families to do their own education work and to create their own pathways to self-determination. As you all know, the reading disparities across the state of Minnesota has been persistent. We have built a body of evidence that there's nothing wrong with our children, that if we're able to use culture as a resource to reach them and engage them, intrinsically motivating them, then they will do the work that is necessary to increase their reading skills, to increase their academic performance. And when we take this holistic, whole family, whole community approach, families develop the support systems to actually sustain that trajectory for life success. You know, when I was looking at the trend data out of Department of Ed, over 75% Black children in the state of Minnesota are not meeting reading standards. And it wasn't, except for 2014, where the reading proficiency scores even broke 30%. Over the years, as I said, we've built a body of evidence, and the statistics speak for themselves, that when we use culture as a resource, we can affect how children and families view themselves, and we're able to reverse what we say are the root issues that get in the way of academic success. A key root issue is self-doubt. Right now, we're working with a seventh grader in Minneapolis, who's reading at a first grade level. Our concern is that with the pandemic and everything that we've been through, these disparate outcomes will become worse unless we seize this moment to intervene and to take a value-driven approach. Mm-hmm. So that our children and families can recognize the strength, the brilliance, the beauty that's inherent in them, and we build upon their strengths. So again, Chair Daphne and committee members, thank you so much for this opportunity to share a bit of our work. I'm excited to have our parents share their personal experiences with our programs and our approach. Thank you.
Outstanding. Thank you, Mr. Ford. Next on the list is Anjali Keetum, parent in the program. Ms. Keetum, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Anjali Keetum. Thank you for having me. In third grade, my son was identified as a struggling reader in St. Paul Public Schools. He was terrified about this because he had learned that building prison beds was based on fourth grade reading scores. He described experiencing impatience and no faith in his ability to read from his teachers. He attended NCAT Sankofa program in the summer of 2014. He describes his experience at NCAT as having teachers who actually believed in his ability to read and think. He received an award for the most improvement levels that summer, and it meant so much to him. Just a few weeks ago, he reflected on the moment as, in his words, this is what it feels like to be in community. He went from a struggling reader to now in 11th grade, being an outstanding scholar. His course load is primarily AP classes. He's considering medicine as his field of study and was recently invited to a medical internship at Johns Hopkins University, which he will do this summer. He understood from that young age that the school spaces he was in didn't necessarily see his potential, but NCAT helped him see his potential. And like his ancestors, to persevere despite the skepticism. Attending NCAT changed his entire trajectory. There are so many Black boys like my son in this country. Please pass this bill so that we can realize the beauty of all they have to give with NCAT's help. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kadeem. Last of the testifiers on my list, Marvelline Tripp, also a parent in the program. Ms. Tripp, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Daphne and committee members. My name is Marvelyn Tripp. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in front of you all and share the impact that NACAD has had on my life and a few other instances I've had the privilege to witness and be part of, which will validate why it is essential to fund NACAD's programming, not just for families of color, but for all children, educators, social workers, daycare providers, and really anyone who works with our families of color. Back in 2016, I received government assistance or MFIP and was referred by my employment counselor to attend NACAD's programming. And to be honest, I initially declined the opportunity because of my experiences and lack of trust in systems to do anything to really assist in stabilizing Black families mentally or financially. But I'm so grateful that I reconsidered. Getting connected with NACAD has been a life-changing experience. Before going to NACAD, I showed up at my daughter's conferences, but I never really showed up. I believe whatever I was told and never questioned those I trusted with my daughter's education or academic records. At the time, I was dealing with employers using me for my skills, never being offered permanent positions. I was fighting and enduring trauma from systemic injustice. I lived in a dump where my slumlord landlord preyed on young single mothers of color. And I was trying my hardest to build my skills and create a better life for me and my daughter. And to be honest, it was hard at the time to recognize my own skills. I had the privilege to participate in NACAD's parent power programs and CPAR and really gain a lot of skills, not just regarding literacy, but really it helped develop skills within myself and recognize skills, my learning styles, my daughter's learning styles, and really advocate for myself and my daughter through systems. I've witnessed my daughter having her reading levels or her records, her academic records marked. And again, I said before, I never showed up and really kind of deciphered what I was told. But after attending NACAD, I had the opportunity to see kind of where she was, engage her, and then go to conferences to see what was being put in my daughter's records, and it didn't match up. And when I spoke on that and brought it to administrators' attention, the next thing I saw was that my daughter couldn't be attacked academically, but in her personal development, she had started to be attacked. And that really bothered me because that meant me, that it was kind of marking me as like insufficient. So again, I had the privilege to be part of NACAD, my daughter being part of Sankofa Reading Services and some of the summer camps. And what it did was it allowed us, you know, to kind of dismantle some of the things that were being reinforced within her, especially culturally. We were able to, I know in school, I noticed, especially with this distant learning, my daughter had this sense of insufficiency by what she was taught from Black history, like slavery or that slave master's mentality. And it really allowed me to really speak up and really be more in tune to how I show up for my daughter. Disparities exist for a reason, and unfortunately, families of color are predominantly those numbers. Literacy is used to gauge our children's success rates, but yet I have never witnessed funding being put towards programs that support children of color, specifically, or organizations that focus on our children's and families of color. NACAD is more than a literacy organization. It supports the family as a unit, literacy skills, knowing you and your child's styles, learning skills, and gives you the ability to recognize and name your skills. NACAD supports stability, advocacy, changing the lens in which you view yourself and your family, and a determination to no longer be limited by society's false stereotypes, and a healthy sense of cultural identity, which is paramount, especially as we navigate our experiences in the past 2 years. So I really do thank you all for listening to me. And I hope that we can work together, hopefully everyone, to support funding NACAD so that we can make these services and programming available to everyone.
Thank you much for sharing your story, Ms. Tripp. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
When this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of the bill hearing. We received no request for public testimony. I do see, however, several members have questions. Let's start with Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think my question is for Mr. Ford, but I'll let anybody pitch in. But And I love hearing these success stories. And I think it's so important to diversify our education to make it work for individual students and groups and so on. And looks like this is one way. So my question is, can you help me understand the logistics of how this program works? For example, you know, is it that the students come after school for tutoring? Do they come on Saturdays? Is family counseling involved? And how does that work? Do you go to the homes? Do they come to you? And how are families identified? Just give me a brief look at what, you know, what does that look like?
Mr. Ford, can you take us into the weeds a little bit, please? Mm-hmm.
Most certainly, Mr. Chair and Representative Bennett. So our Sankofa Reading Program is an intensive 9-week intervention. It's provided in school as a tier 2 pullout, as well as after school and during the summer. So during the 9 weeks, it consists of 3 90-minute sessions per week, for a total of 40 and a half hours of tutoring. Our tutors are highly qualified. We train them. They reflect the ethnic and cultural backgrounds of the children that we serve. The curriculum assessment and instruction actually mirrors, by design, it mirrors the reading instruction that takes place in school. But what makes the difference is infusing culture at the heart and soul of all that we do. And so those cultural elements look like including cultural rituals and routines, leveled African-centered children's literature. As I said, the tutors come from and reflect the community of the children. And so it's this infusion of these practices in the reader's workshop model, for example, really touches the children intrinsically. So then when it comes to mastering the 5 dimensions of reading, phonemic awareness, phonics, decoding, comprehension, and fluency, the children are excited about building those technical reading skills. The last thing I'll say is how we think about literacy and the reading skills. We think about them as a cognitive set of skills and processes that are transferable for academic success. The support that we provide by working with the parents helps the parents help their children continue after the 9 weeks are up. And so our Parent Power program is delivered via Zoom. It's a set of 4 2-hour Zoom sessions. And then for those parents that are able and interested in taking a deeper dive, we have a second course that's an 8-week long intensive experience where we get into issues of learning styles and multiple intelligence and actually creating a self-determination plan for the parent, the whole family, and building connections with the community. Final thing I'll say on the logistical front is after parents and children complete the programming, we have a monthly community gathering we call the NIA gatherings. And the purpose is for the parents to connect and build relationships with one another. So they actually find and create community that supports them on their new trajectory. So I hope that was useful.
Mm-hmm. Representative Bennett? Thank you.
Chair, thank you. And that was very helpful. And it sounds like a wonderful program meeting the needs of these kids. Just a quick follow-up question. If you could tell me how the students are identified to take part in the program. And then is the parent component required? Do you have a problem getting parents involved? Or do you find parents really want to be involved? Sounds like, you know, we've had some parents here who are very positive and want to be involved. But is that an issue? And how do you garner that parent involvement? Because as a former teacher, I know that's super important.
Mr. Ford?
Chair Daphne, Representative Bennett, thank you for that question. So parents and families are referred in a myriad of ways. So in our partnership with Ramsey County Workforce Solutions, employment counselors refer the families. In some of our other partnerships, for example, with St. Paul Promise Neighborhood, Northside Achievement Zone, and other partners, we bring our programs to the schools connected to those community partners. Families find us and we find the families in a variety of ways. On the question of challenges around engaging parents, it ebbs and flows. But one of the things that we have seen with COVID and the pandemic and all of us being kind of forced to adapt to this virtual experiences that we have with one another, we've actually seen an incredible increase in parents being engaged and reaching out to us and actually completing our Parent Power program. So this pandemic has provided, you know, some opportunities so that we're not dealing with some of the transportation issues, the childcare issues, and so forth. So we're in a process of learning because we're a learning organization. And so as we continue and move forward, and as we're looking to the future, we're looking to expand our reach across the 7-county metro area, but we are also receiving requests from other parts of the state like St. Cloud, and we're beginning to launch partnerships there where we can provide our programs and services as well as our training program. So all of the lessons that we learn, we share those lessons with schools and community organizations through our training and professional development services.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much, Mr. Ford. That was very helpful.
Very good. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Chair. To Giovanni Ford, I don't know if you remember me, but I probably came to you maybe 14 years ago, and I brought my daughter to you. Thank you to Leslie Ford and also Rosella Ford, to your parents. Thank you also. But I brought my daughter to you. Because she brought some math home that I had no idea, and I was embarrassed, and I didn't want to come because I was going to be the only parent that didn't know how to do lattice math. I had no idea what lattice math was. But when I got to the program, I found out there was a lot of other parents that didn't know what lattice math was. And so we actually together learned lattice math. But not only that, I think Giovanni's being modest because he also taught us the difference between a behavior disorder and a learning disorder. And he also taught us how to be our child's biggest advocate at school and what questions to ask at these parent-teacher conferences. Like, here I'm a young knucklehead with my first baby. I don't know, you know, having a kid doesn't come with an instruction manual. And so there was community that surrounded me with my first child. And I just wanted to chime in and say my daughter now is sitting at a 4.0 GPA with several college offers right now as a junior in high school. My son also went through the program. He's reading 3 grade levels above his class. And so it's like a walking testimony. I don't know if you remember me because I was like one of the loudest ones. But thank you. Thank you to your family also for the help that you provided for my family. And this is what community is all about. Because I was really embarrassed. I did not want to come in there because I'm like, oh, they're going to know I'm not smarter than a 5th grader. I found out that nobody in the room knew lattice math. It's like a new formula they're using. I just know long division and the way we taught math, but you guys actually had it down packed and taught parents how to be advocates for our children. And I just want to say thank you.
Mr. Ford, I'll give you an opportunity to respond, provided you don't explain to me what lattice math is.
Thank you, Chair Daphne, Representative Thompson. Yes, of course, I remember you. That's one of the most rewarding and exciting parts of being a part of our organization, is that once families connect with us, we consider you family. So you don't forget family, right? What I will lift up in what you shared, Representative Thompson, is this issue of self-efficacy. The belief that I can. The number one issue that inhibits academic success for our children is self-doubt. But it is the same root issue of self-doubt that is affecting our parents. I will also go as far as to say that self-doubt is the number one issue that inhibits school teachers from reaching and teaching all children. And so self-efficacy is the foundation for self-determination. And we are truly all in it together. The future economic viability, social viability of the state is dependent upon our ability to affirm our collective selves. Mm-hmm. Culture matters. And so in order to reach our children and families where they're at, we have to understand where they're at and support them in understanding who they are and the cultural heritage and tradition that they come from, because our strength is in us knowing who we are, how we got here, so we can determine where we go together. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Ford. Representative Thompson, any follow-up?
No follow-up, Chair.
Thank you, sir. Representative Erickson, you are last on the list at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question has to do with asking Mr. Ford about your contributions. You know, what do you receive annually in contributions for your nonprofit? And do you also charge fees for any of the services?
Mr. Ford?
Chair Daphne, Representative Erickson, thank you for that question. So our average annual budget is right in the neighborhood of $850,000. Our revenue is a combination of grants, fee-for-service contracts with some of our community partners and individual donors. We do not charge families fees to participate. Through our contracts and grants and fee-for-service contracts, that takes care of the funding for children and families to engage. Schools and other organizations will also contract with us to provide our professional development training. Again, that's where we share the lessons that we've learned and share some of our best practices and provide support to schools and organizations to actually adopt some of the principles and some of our best practices. So those are revenue generating. What this bill will help us do is build critical infrastructure that will support growth and expansion. As I noted earlier, we're receiving requests from other parts of the state like St. Cloud. And what we really need is some key infrastructure to build our capacity to meet the growing needs.
Representative Erickson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Ford. That was informative. I think that you should start a school, for example, a charter school, because your program has so many benefits, and your statements about, you know, meeting children where they are and then moving them through high expectations to where they can be and should be, you know, is what we want the goal to be always in our classrooms. So I hope you think in the future maybe about moving into the classroom as a school, because I think what you're doing, it has such great benefit. And I thank you for that and for the parents who testified, because when you have parent engagement, which is what our definition of cultural competency says in law in Minnesota, that, you know, that ability for educators and parents to interact on culture is one part of the cultural competency definition. So I hope that, you know, all of our teachers are paying attention to that. But thank you to you for paying attention to that as you deal with your population. Thank you very much.
Mr. Ford, thank you for getting us into the weeds on the work that you do, and also talking about the ability to expand beyond where you are now, but to other communities across the state. There's something I'm gonna get wrong here about not hiding your light under the bushel. But if you've got something that works for kids in Ramsey County, I'm gonna assume it's gonna work for kids in Sherburne County too. And those kids are deserving of, equally deserving of supports and interventions that work for them. Representative Moran, closing comments?
Well, what can I say? They are dead cats. In the relationship that they have with children and parents and community is a clear value statement of the strengths and approaches they bring to see the educational outcomes around literacy and self-advocacy. It's working. But I also, in the closing, want to share an article that I seen on March 5th, 2021 from MenPost. It was an article that stated that, this is the words in the article, that Minnesota has one of the nation's worst educational achievement gaps between Black and white students. In 2019, it ranked 50th for racial disparities in high school graduation rates. The Minnesota report card highlights the wide gaps in teacher and staff count and math and reading achievement levels between white students versus Black and Latex students due to systemic injustice. Mr. Chair, when I heard that they are doing this awesome work off of 800,000, it just threw me back. I just think it needs to be so much greater to expand the need that we are seeing right now here in the state of Minnesota. So, Mr. Chair and members, let's be intentional in reducing disparities in Minnesota, and let's fund what works. I ask for your support. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, Chair Moran. With that, Representative Wolgamott renews his motion to lay over House File 3816 for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. Mr. Ford, Ms. Kadeem, Ms. Tripp, thank you all for spending part of your mornings with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Sandsteed, I'm going to hand you that magic virtual gavel, if I may.
You may.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. Today, the final bill that we will be hearing is House File 3948 from Chair Dabney. Members, it's our intention to lay this bill over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill by 11:55 a.m. this morning. Chair Dabney, would you like to make a motion to move House File 3948 before the committee to lay it over for further consideration and possible inclusion in the future omnibus bill?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, the bill is before us. Chair Dabney, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Chair Sandsteed. Members, we all know that these past few pandemic years have been hard on students. They've been hard on all of us. But students have spent a lot more time inside, on screens, separated from their peers. Academically, many students are challenged with delayed learning, and too many have struggled at the secondary level with earning the credits needed for graduation, that golden ticket walking across that stage at the end of their senior year. Then there have been the mental health challenges that school districts are reporting across the state. I met just this morning with Central Minnesota superintendents, and mental health concerns were top on their list. At the same time we're seeing all those concerns, we've seen people flock to the outdoors. They've headed to our state and local parks, to any available trail, and to our state's famous lakes. And we know that the mental health benefits of time spent outdoors are considerable. House File 3948 is a bill to expand outdoor-based credit recovery opportunities for students in Minnesota. It would appropriate $494,000 to Wilderness Inquiry to expand their outdoor credit recovery program to four districts across Minnesota. Two of those districts would be in the 11 county metro area and two school districts outside of the metropolitan school district area. This would be a multi-year effort for Wilderness Inquiry to partner with licensed teachers to expand summer learning opportunities for students. The bill also provides for paid fellowship opportunities for students who are interested in pursuing job possibilities in the outdoor recreation field, a growing area of our economy. Wilderness Inquiry is required to submit a report on the effectiveness of the program and its outcomes once the activity is completed for accountability purposes. And Madam Chair, with me today, I have two testifiers, Erica Rivers and Talon Benavides, to talk in detail about the program. I'd like to hand it back to you now, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Rivers, Executive Director of Wilderness Inquiry. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Erica Rivers, and I am the new Executive Director for Wilderness Inquiry. We're a four-decade-old nonprofit whose mission is to connect people of all ages, backgrounds, and abilities to each other and to the natural world through shared outdoor adventures. This bill is really a continuation of the theme of self-efficacy and student success that Brother Ford just so eloquently spoke to in the previous bill, as you will learn from our next testimonial from Talon Benavides. Wilderness Inquiry has worked with Minneapolis Public Schools since 2014 to provide enriched summer school opportunities for students in credit recovery. This program inspires learning through hands-on outdoor recreation learning that is place-based. Students work with licensed teachers to practice the scientific method, learn about ecosystems in which they live, and to use their natural surroundings to bring learning alive. The competency-based curriculum is developed in partnership with licensed teachers to meet standards for grades 9 through 12. Each subject-specific program is 4 to 5 days in length, and students achieve core competencies from one of our floating classrooms, which are 24-foot canoes and other hands-on outdoor activities. Over the past 8 years, we're proud to say that approximately 700 Minneapolis Public School students have completed place-based credit recovery programs, earning credits in science, language arts, chemistry, physics, and math. Our goal is to increase graduation rates by transforming summer learning through engaging and experiential outdoor programs that are replicable and scalable. We can do this by helping teachers use outdoor engagement as a medium for teaching and delivering academic content. In the process, we also help students realize social emotional growth as well as develop important life skills. This funding request will help us expand this program to St. Paul this summer and to other communities in greater Minnesota in future years. Some of the targeted communities we're looking at for future expansion include Austin, Rochester, St. Cloud, and perhaps a North Shore community as well. This credit recovery model innovates in three really important ways: by advancing public-private partnerships to achieve academic outcomes, by encouraging inclusive and equitable access to the health wellness benefits of the outdoors and nature-based recreation, and by providing an opportunity to create scalable and replicable opportunities for all Minnesota high school students. At this time, I'm really happy to introduce Talon Benavides, who has led many of our credit recovery experiences for Wilderness Inquiry over the years. He's here to talk about his personal experiences with the program, both as a student and as an outdoor leader. Also present today is Julie Ebbiston, Wilderness Inquiry's Associate Executive Director and a former St. Paul Public School teacher who helped develop this impactful program in 2014. And she'll be available following Talon's comments to answer any specific questions members may have about the program. Thank you again for your time. I'll turn it over to Talon.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Benavides. Please state your name for the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Talon Benavides. I was raised in the north side of Minneapolis, and I'm here today to share my story and my connection to Wilderness Inquiry and the Credit Recovery Program. I'd like to start by saying this program changed the course of my life and opened up doors I didn't even know existed. I first crossed paths with Wilderness Inquiry at a very young age, little me paddling down the mighty Mississippi and seeing the confluence of our two great rivers is forever burned into my memory. In late middle school, I was also on one of the last trips to go through the lock and dam. These early experiences stuck with me because my childhood was anything but conventional, and I had little to no access to the outdoors. I had never even been camping until late high school. I stumbled upon the opportunity to do a 5-day credit recovery trip in Voyageurs National Park. An unfamiliar place that I had no idea about. What I did know is that I needed these credits, and I wasn't confident in my ability to acquire those in a traditional classroom setting. So I bought a camping backpack for $4 at a garage sale, packed it full of things that my high school brain thought I would need, and headed off with a group of random high schoolers and my two best friends in tow, accompanied by a bunch of excited people in bright yellow hats with ridiculously large canoes. Over the course of that week, I earned my credit, but I also gained so many new experiences and feelings, so many new thoughts and connections. My eyes were open to the outdoor world like never before. All of a sudden, this vast expanse of pines and lakes didn't seem so intimidating. I realized I could see myself in that bright yellow hat, and that's exactly what I wanted to do. So that's what I did. Now here we are in my sixth season as an outdoor leader. Two of those seasons I was working as a river fellow with the National Park Service. I facilitated hundreds of trips, and none of them are more near and dear to my heart than our credit recovery trips. I've been on almost every credit recovery trip in the city since then, and there is something so special about taking a young adult and giving them the opportunity for a sense of place and belonging in their own city. Seeing their eyes light up when they realize the power of the river or the importance of the land that we live on. Changing their idea of what an outdoorsy person can be. No fancy gear needed or a lifetime of experience, just a sense of adventure and intentionality. In the city, Adventures in the City takes a group of high schoolers and shows them all the significant and beautiful features of the city. Something about getting the body moving gets those gears turning, and the kids you get on the first day are almost unrecognizable from who they are on the last day. The amount of growth and learning that happens out there is unlike any program I've seen before. Something so beautiful about watching a group of angsty teens sit up peacefully under the cottonwoods and do their work. The outdoor classroom is a beautiful one and definitely needs to be utilized more. A lot of thanks is to the amazing teachers that make this program possible. I always make it a priority to work our credit recovery programs because I know what it did for me and what path it helped me take. If I can facilitate a similar experience for an individual, I know that it'll make a difference in their life and in our community. I think our programs can be an incredible option for students to make up credit and also learn important life skills at the same time. Coming from someone who struggled with school, this opportunity to learn outside the classroom was unlike anything I encountered previously. Knowing that I could apply this schoolwork to the real world made learning in general more appealing. Every year, I look forward to that week in the summer where I get to help someone fall in love with learning and growing in the outdoors. I can't imagine where I would be today if it wasn't for that lovely trip into the woods. The credit recovery program is a beautiful thing, and I hope every kid gets the opportunity to do such in-depth learning in the natural world and get credit for it. Thank you for letting me share my story, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Benavides, for your testimony. Chair Dabney, I'm not sure if you have another testifier with Ms. Edmiston, or if she's just here to answer questions.
Madam Chair, my understanding is she's playing backup on Ms. Rivers as the creator, the founder of the program, and is here to answer questions, but doesn't necessarily need to testify.
Very good. Thank you for that clarification. Member questions. Or I should say, before we go to member questions, when this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during a public portion of this bill hearing. We have not received any requests from the public at this time. So at this time, we can go to any member questions. I am not seeing any member questions. So Representative Dabney, closing remarks.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. I think the last two bills kind of bring forward a conversation for us about the context of learning and the community connections to learning and the environment in here, in this bill, literally the environment that students learn in. And I think it just goes to the idea that if we put the student at the center of our deliberations as this committee, the answers start to emerge for some innovation in our schools and in our communities towards that education for students. So members, Madam Chair, I appreciate the time. Thank you to the testifiers, Mr. Benavides. Thank you for sharing your powerful story, Ms. Rivers. Thank you for being here today. And your leadership. And members, with that, I appreciate your consideration and renew my motion that House File, I got to get back to the number, Madam Chair.
House 3948.
Thank you very much. House File 3948 be laid over for possible inclusion and further consideration in an omnibus bill. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
And members, with that, House File 3948 is laid over. And we are adjourned.